All right, welcome to Making the Argument. Before we get started, I have a very important announcement. We have a brand new deal with GoodRanchers.com. That's right. If you go into Good Ranchers and you use promo code Nick and you sign up for one of their subscriptions, you're not only going to get $15 off, but do you remember the old deal where you got 2 pounds of ground beef with each order? Well, we just upped the game. That's right. You can choose top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon now. Every single order you get on that subscription is going to come with free top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon. You get to choose which one if you use promo code Nick. And again, $15 off on top of that. That's a savings of $480 in meat by signing up for one of those subscriptions. Not to mention the fact that if you are looking for a gift for someone that is impossible to shop for, you can go on to goodranchers.com and get one of their brand new gift boxes. Now, this is a limited time only offer. It's part of their overall Black Friday special. So go on to goodranchers.com to get more details. Sign up for promo code Nick in order to get that deal, and let's get on with the show.
Today, we're going behind the scenes to find out if all public school teachers really like the level of government micromanagement they have to deal with on a daily basis. Then we'll be making the argument for more choice and opportunity within our education system. And finally, on Things That Make America Great, we'll be talking about a very unique story about a young woman who rose herself out of poverty through school choice. It's all coming up next on Making the Argument with Nick Freitas. One thing I've learned is this, in politics and in combat, cowardice is contagious, but so is courage. And if you're willing to be the first person over those ramparts, you will be shocked at how many people will come with you. I'm asking you to come with me. I'm asking you to be a part of the generation that will restore the promise of this country and breathe new life into it. Right before I was serving my first term in the Virginia House of Delegates, I had a group of teachers ask if I would be willing to sit down and discuss some issues with them. I said, great, that sounds wonderful, let's do it. They immediately came back and said, okay, we'll agree to meet with you, but you cannot tell anyone that we met, you cannot share our names, and you can't talk specifically about what we're going to tell you. And I was a little bit taken aback, like, what is going on in our local public schools that you would be so concerned to share something with me? And so I met with them. We met at an undisclosed location in order to hear their issues. And I got to tell you, I really thought that the number one thing we were going to be talking about was teacher pay. And that maybe they were worried that the administrators or someone else would get upset with them. We talked for maybe an hour and a half. They didn't bring up teacher pay one time. The entirety of what they wanted to discuss was how the state and federal government is constantly micromanaging their classroom and was turning a profession that they absolutely loved into something that they were having a hard time dealing with on a day-to-day basis anymore. And as you're listening to these stories, they're talking about the amount of time that they have to spend every week just to comply with federal, state, and local mandates on how they put their lessons plans together. If they have a teachable moment and they want to shift from their lesson plan a little bit in order to help a student out, they can get into trouble for that. If they have a student that comes in that had really, really bad standardized test scores and they get a 20, 30, 40% increase, but they still don't meet the arbitrary number that the government's established, they get in trouble with that and it reflects poorly on them as a teacher. And as I'm listening to all of this, the one common theme that they kept coming back to was they didn't feel like they had any control over their classroom anymore. That it was all about trying to fit within certain mandates so that they could get the funding that they needed to actually teach the kids. And here's the problem as you look at it. It's not just that they have to deal with this, and it's not just heartbreaking to see people that went into teaching, you know, not to get rich, but because they had a passion for learning and really inspiring kids to learn and helping them be able to negotiate difficult subjects and really develop a love and a passion for education and learning. And to see these teachers just feel defeated. Not because they can't do their job, not because they're incapable of teaching kids, not even because kids are coming in from difficult situations and might have to be dealing with things outside of the classroom that they've got to deal with inside the classroom, but because the government was the one standing in the way of them being able to do what they know needed to be done for that individual student or for that classroom full of students. And they can't do it because the moment they go a little bit off of lesson plan, they're worried about what it actually means for them. And this is one of the biggest problems that we face within our education system. I don't know of anybody out there that doesn't think that education is incredibly important. I don't know of anybody out there that doesn't want every child to have a good educational experience so that they can go on through life, be successful, be independent, be an economic success, right? We all want those things. The real question is how do we achieve it? And the way that the government has decided to achieve it is not just through funding. The way they've decided to achieve it is through funding and massive government oversight of the classroom. And what that's led to is an education system which caters toward those organizations within the educational infrastructure that have really good lobbyists. That's why you see the overall class, the overall number of students in classes has increased under 10% since 1970. But the overall population of people working in our schools has increased at over 90%. We have all these additional administrators coming in, which take up large portions of the budget. And again, it's not to say that there aren't room for some administration, for some specialists, but we have clearly gotten to a place right now that because politicians have such a stranglehold over our education system, that we're making decisions that are not based off of what is the best thing for that child, for that student, for that teacher. We're making decisions based off of what lobbyists are encouraging us to do so we can increase school budgets and create more jobs within the school system, as opposed to looking for the most efficient and effective ways to educate our kids. And I will tell you, it is absolutely heartbreaking to listen to what our teachers have to deal with right now. And that is one of the things I've worked on within the General Assembly. It's one of the things I'm looking forward to working on the federal side as well. And it's all about how do we get more control in the hands of teachers, in the hands of parents, in the hands of teachers, not politicians. If we really want an educational system that works for all of our students, we need to start listening to these teachers that are begging us to give them more control, give them more freedom within their classrooms to do what they need to do in order to make sure their children in their classroom can become a success. So a couple years back, I was asked by a couple of youth organizations to come up to the White House to discuss education reform. And when it came to my turn to speak about it, I said, I want to give you guys an example. I want to give you guys a scenario, and you tell me what you think about it. Let's say in the 1950s and 60s, the government got together and said, you know what? Gosh, eating and grocery stores are so important that there's no way we can leave it to the private sector. And so government is going to start to take over this process. And so they pass legislation, and the next thing you know, you're living in a world where you have a government grocery store assigned to you based off of your address. So wherever you live, you have a government grocery store, that's the one you shop at, and you show up to go get your groceries. Now, you don't actually go into the grocery store and shop for your groceries. No. Your groceries are now going to be determined by a government agency that will look at the caloric index necessary for your particular family, and they decide what your groceries should look like. Now, if you're not happy with your groceries, no problem. You just need to go hire a lobbyist, and then you're going to go down and fight with the legislature for 2 to 4 years while different organizations come in and lobby to add different products to your grocery bag. And maybe if you're lucky, you'll get some changes. Not to mention the fact that nobody working at this government grocery store will actually be rewarded based off of creativity, work ethic, ingenuity. Nope, they're just going to be rewarded and compensated based off of seniority. So the longer they're there, regardless of their performance, they will make more money. Does anybody think this is the sort of grocery store they would like to shop at? Not a single hand went up. Every student started looking at me like, that's an absurd idea. Why would anybody even conceptualize of something like that? And then I looked back at them, I said, it's exactly what we did with public education. You are assigned a government school based off of your address. You have really no say over your curriculum. If you're upset about something that's being taught, well, get ready for a huge legislative battle, which will probably span a couple of years at least to get even moderate changes through. None of your teachers are rewarded based off of work ethic, creativity, or ingenuity. In fact, when you look at all the different mandates they have to follow, they can actually get punished for creativity and ingenuity. It's first in, first out. So the longer they're there, regardless of performance, the more they'll get paid. If we can all recognize that setting up a system like this would never work for something as important as feeding our population, why do we expect better results from an organization for educating our population? Now, understand something. This is not a dig on teachers. This is not a dig on all the people that are working really hard within our public school system. I'm not fighting against them. I'm advocating for them. How many years do we have to go through with students being consigned to failing schools, with teachers leaving the profession because they are sick and tired of the government constantly micromanaging their classroom? I think it's time that we actually move toward a process where we can allow parents to have some choice on where their kids go to school. Because not only would this be better for students, this would be better for teachers. Because right now, schools get away with spending billions of dollars every year across the country on more administrative positions, on more programs that have little to nothing to do with actually educating your child in the way that you would like to see them educated. But if we actually had school choice, where parents got to decide, they got to allocate the money assigned to their student to the school of their choice, not only would that create more competition within the marketplace, not would only create different innovative ways and reward innovative ways, but if you're one of those teachers that works really hard and does a great job, parents are going to want to come to the school that you teach at. And so now you're no longer consigned to just government pay matrices. You now get to go in and negotiate your salary with an administrator or a school that knows that the only reason students are coming to their school is because they want to get you as a teacher. Now, everything I've just talked about seems fairly simple and easy to understand. And the reason for that is because that's how the rest of the economy functions. We actually reward innovation, creativity, effectiveness, and efficiency. In the rest of the marketplace, we allow for open competition because we realize that people have different tastes, they have different abilities, they have different weaknesses. And the economy actually merges and adapts in order to be able to meet the needs of individual consumers. But that's not what the government does. The government comes up with one-size-fits-all approaches and then crams them down the throats of not only our students, but our teachers as well. But if you actually provide for some opportunity and some choice in that process, well, then if you have a child that really excels at math, but maybe they need a little bit more time with reading, you can actually go to a place that will cater curriculums to the individual needs of your student, not based off of some state-imposed standardized test. Now, as I explain this, if you're thinking to yourself, well, this actually makes a lot of sense. Why can't we do something like that? I'll tell you exactly why. Because every time we try to talk about putting a little bit more choice into the hands of parents, a little bit more choice into the hands of teachers, we get inundated with lobbyists and unions that are dedicated to the establishment as it is. They make a lot of money with a system that doesn't change, with a system that essentially stays stagnant, because there are billions of dollars to be made if you are gaming the system within public education. But if that's true, and it's also true that most parents want greater options for their students and teachers want more control over their classroom, why can't we convince people of actually just allowing for more choice? Well, I want to go back to my grocery store example. If for the last 40 years, the only place you were ever able to get your groceries was at a government-run grocery store, and no matter how inefficient it was, no matter how poorly it operated, you would still associate that government grocery store with the only way that you're able to get food. And the moment anybody comes in and tries to convince you that there might be a better way, you're going to be scared of losing what you have. And that is what we've been taught to think about public education. We've been taught to think, and you can see it through the arguments that are used against school choice every single time. The moment we talk about any additional choice or opportunities or departure from the current system, we immediately get inundated with arguments that we don't care about poor kids, we don't care about public education, we don't care about teachers. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, if you really want to help public education, if you really want to help poor kids that are constantly being sent to schools that are failing them, if you really want to help that overworked teacher that is trying desperately hard to make a difference in the lives of their students, then choice is absolutely necessary. But we've got to get people thinking outside of the box of what has been crammed down their throats for decades now. And that's what you see within a lot of the voucher program movements. That's what you see in education savings accounts. That is why when Barack Obama tried to shut down the voucher program in Washington, D.C., it wasn't a bunch of rich parents stepping forward saying you need to keep this open. No, it was poor parents whose students finally had an opportunity to go to a school that was actually going to cater to their individual needs and set them up for success. So if we really care about education, then we can't let the government have monopolistic control over it. We need to empower parents, empower students, and empower teachers. And the only way I know to effectively do that is for money to follow the student, to give everybody more options within the economy. And everybody that is fighting against that, I've noticed one common trend. They are either very passionate about government control, or they're very passionate about the money they make from that government control.
Mm-hmm.
Today on Things That Make America Great, I want you to see this clip from Prager University and listen to the story of Denisha Merriweather, who was a young girl that was trapped in a bad school, trapped in a bad situation, and school choice provided her an opportunity to turn around her life at a young age and become a success.
Public schools aren't the answer for everyone. They weren't the answer for me. Schools in my neighborhood in Jacksonville, Florida, functioned less as places of learning and more as warehouses to keep kids off the street. I know I was one of those kids. I don't blame teachers or parents. I'm not interested in blaming anybody. I'm only interested in making things better. And the only way to do that is to give parents and students a choice. If a student can't get the education they need at their public school, there has to be an alternative. Thankfully, there was for me. My early years in my Jacksonville school were not a success, to put it mildly. I seldom understood the lesson. I was often confused and frustrated. I asked my teachers questions, but it seemed to me that this just annoyed them. So I stopped asking questions, and I withdrew into myself. I failed third grade twice. Fourth and fifth weren't much better. I lashed out by getting into fights with my classmates. D's and F's filled my report card. I was going nowhere. I was just another black kid in the warehouse. But fortunately for me, my life changed the summer before sixth grade. I went to live with my godmother. She had one overriding thought: to get me into a better school. A good education, she knew, was the only way to get out of the hole I had dug myself into. She didn't have any more money than my family did, but she had a plan. That was worth a lot. She knew about another school, a private school. Using a tax credit scholarship, you can call it a voucher, she enrolled me at Esprit de Corps Center for Learning. Esprit demands excellence from its students. It teaches them to be warriors for knowledge and for good values. The teachers at Esprit were invested in my success. They took the time to figure out why learning was so difficult for me, and they tailored their instruction to my learning style. Sound elite? It is. Sound expensive? It's not. In fact, Esprit spends less money per student than the public school I had attended. Instead of dreading my classes, I began to look forward to them. Instead of fistfights, I began doing community service work. I even earned the National Police Athletic League's Girl of the Year Award in 2009. When it was time for me to apply to college, Esprit even helped me to research scholarships and apply for waivers so that I could take my college entrance test for free. On June 5th, 2010, I graduated from Esprit de Corps with honors, becoming the first member of my immediate family to earn a high school diploma, and eventually the first to earn a college degree, and then a master's. Without school choice, none of this would have been possible. Why is it so hard to grasp? Why are so many people so resistant to children and parents having a choice of schools? The system, especially for economically disadvantaged kids, is broken. I've seen it up close, and I've seen what happens when it works better when there is choice. School choice allows parents who live in undervalued neighborhoods to pick the school that best works for their children. Of course, the opponents of school choice, the politicians, and the teachers' unions who profit off of keeping poor black kids trapped in the warehouse, say it takes money away from students who need it the most. But does anybody believe that money is the problem? Washington, D.C., for example, spends over $20,000 per student. We don't need any more money. We need more choice. Let's challenge public schools to compete on quality. Only competition breeds excellence. Prosperous parents can choose where to send their kids to school, public, private, or charter, wherever they have the best chance to succeed. Why shouldn't all parents have that choice? We have the money to make it happen. We just need the will. None of us deserve to be imprisoned by our zip codes. Education is the only way out of generational poverty. I'm a living example. Let's help redefine public education to make it work for everybody. There's only one way to do that. School choice. What are we waiting for? I'm Denisha Merriweather for Prager University.
Now, I don't know about you, but as I watch that and as I listen to her story, I don't see a young woman that hates public education. I don't see a young woman that hates teachers. I see a young woman that was trapped in a bad situation, and school choice gave her an opportunity to rise above circumstances and to be able to build a life for herself. And she succeeded. And so I think when we look at this issue, we need to start talking about the real human cost, the real cost to our kids on what happens when we allow the government to monopolize control over education. All we're asking for is greater opportunity. We want an education system that will be as specific and unique and individualized as the students that we are actually trying to educate and prepare to go out into the world and to be successful. So as we look at this issue and as we look at, you know, an excellent case of someone that was able to rise above circumstances in this country and become a success, and who is now taking the time to go out there and advocate on behalf of other kids that were just like her, that need this opportunity. We need to be passionate about this. And so, yeah, we're going to get accused of a lot of things. But just like Denisha did, we all have an obligation to stand up and fight for the rights of our students to get a quality education, not controlled by government, but controlled by parents and by teachers, so that they can be successful and decide what their American dream looks like. That is all the time we have today on Making the Argument with Nick Freitas. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Also, please leave us a 5-star rating. Again, ratings are the currency of podcasts. So if you can just click that 5-star rating for us, it really helps us get these messages, get these arguments out to people that need to hear them. Also, share it with your friends. If you like the sort of arguments that we're making right now, we need you to be able to push that out and start some discussions with your friends and family about the issues that we're covering on this podcast. Also, you can go to nick4va.com. We also have a link to the podcast right there, a link to the YouTube channel as well. Again, thank you very much for tuning in with us, and we'll see you next time.
Once again, thank you very much for listening. If you want to support the show, again, one of the best ways you can do it is by heading over to goodranchers.com with promo code Nick. You're going to get $15 off. You sign up for one of those subscriptions and you're going to get up to $480 of free meat with that subscription. You get to pick top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, bacon. It is all up to you. Plus, if you're looking for gifts to get for the people that are impossible to shop for, goodranchers.com also has gift boxes. You need to act quick. This is part of their overall Black Friday special. So head on over to goodranchers.com, use promo code Nick, and once again, thank you for listening.